everyone, welcome to Anatomy of an Agency with me, Katie Traxton. This podcast shares the experiences of people in the public eye who work in the business of sport and entertainment. Whether you're looking to work with talent or for your own representation, we hope to give you honest insight into how things work. The good, the bad, and everything else in between. This episode is part two of our conversation with Triple Olympic rowing champion, Pete Reed.
Pre-wheelchair, in fact, up to when I was about 37, I was very naive and nothing bad happened in my life. I was fine at school, loved as a child, nice family, very, very lucky. And I'm not going to make apologies for anything. I just grew up in a nice environment with nice people. And my life changed radically at a particular point where I ceased to be naive and just this rowing machine that was obsessed by being out on the water and improving in something. And then suddenly my life went in a different direction. I met you. A lot of things fell into place. And I think the wheelchair thing, it's a very visible sign that life can be hard and there are twists and turns and people can see it and relate to that. They can kind of think, well, that's a wheelchair, it must be really hard not walking, and treat me in a different way. But actually, I feel like I can offer some perspectives from both being able-bodied and disabled and lived through a transitional experience and lived through it in a really healthy way. Like, I did transition well, and I'm not God. I was just had an internship from 20 years of doing hard things. So the day, it was the 7th of September in 2019, the day a really hard thing happened, I felt like, okay, normal jogging. I'm good at hard things, and I had a support network around me, and now I get to really think hard about some of the things that made me handle that well, and which things are relevant to most people that also go through hard things, whether that's in work or personal life or space. So I'm not a therapist, I'm not God, I'm not a resilience academic. I've just got some stories that I found really useful going through a change in life from Olympic podiums to being in a wheelchair and everything that involves. And so far, whoever I've been asked to speak to, whether it's something paid with you or something public with the Navy, I've had really nice feedback, and that's a nice thing. It means it gives me purpose and fulfillment, and actually that's the most important thing in life, just your independence and something to wake up for.
Does it ever strike you that when you first got an agent, when you first got representation as a young rower, you were a straight, white, able-bodied man who cut a very imposing figure when you walked into a room and people knew you were there and you were automatically going to be listened to. And now when you go into those same spaces, you get a different kind of reception, or is that not the case?
So I didn't think about that back then, so in my 20s, because I didn't know any different and I wasn't really self-aware enough to notice. And having grown up in the environment I grew up in, it was what I was just normal to me, and I wasn't thoughtful enough to think of how I was coming across. I was just an athlete doing my thing. But it's one of the first things I noticed. Coming back to the Navy was a little bit different, but then getting injured was suddenly very different. So immediately people treated me differently in a wheelchair. Not really better or worse, but just differently. And in fact, I haven't had that many bad experiences where people are deliberately mean. Some experiences where people get it a little bit wrong, but certainly every experience is wildly different to 6'6" and Olympic size and shape and white and male and middle class and all the other boxes I ticked and didn't tick pre-injury. And that forces you to reflect on how I was before and what I am now. And it's also a real privilege, because the biggest difference I've noticed is what people are willing to share with me. Pre-injury, it was almost nothing. So people didn't share anything. I was never intimidating. I never tried to be. But now I'm in no way intimidating to anyone. I'm only 4 foot tall sitting in my chair, and there's clearly something. I've got clear needs in some areas. So people I found find it very easy and comfortable to share their experiences and adversity and challenges with me in an extraordinarily personal way. And that is a privilege. I didn't have access to that before. And it's made me more empathetic, and it's made me realise that life is bigger than a rowing boat and a gold medal time. It's
although it's pretty great to get 3 gold medals.
Well, it was a wonderful life. I had a really good run, and I watched the Olympics thinking in no small part, aren't we lucky? And weren't we good? And all of those really nice things. And so I haven't got any unfinished business with rowing. And I left it for my own reasons and went back to the Navy. And that's in part why it's easier to handle this transition to being disabled and having a wheelchair, because I use my legs a lot when I could. I've got no regrets. I've got no reason to dwell and everything to look forward to. So, people do. It's very different now, and different isn't necessarily bad.
Has that shift in experience changed the work you want to be doing?
Yeah, it has as well. I think the work I was doing previously was more about performance and performing under pressure and teamwork and leadership, and I still like all of that stuff, but I'm almost too new to injury to work out what I want to do. And you and I have, this comes back to the agency thing, I think you and I are really aligned, and we understand each other. There's a good management of expectations. You know where I am with my public life, private life, and all the personal things in between. I'm very nearly 5 years into injury, and actually we haven't got home set up yet. So I'm starting to work out what I am now, who I am now, what my responsibilities are, what my priorities are, and that's Jeannie and Fred are my priorities, and making sure they're safe and loved and we've got a wonderful life. And part of being able to do that is, part of it's having enough money, so that's where you and I work together. Part of it's my own health and fulfillment, so where am I mentally and physically? Can I get to do the things that I want to do with my family? And you asked me about messages before and after. Now I think growing out of injury and transition and getting home sorted out, I think it more and more, I've got a real obligation to be in the public domain talking about disability, about advocating for being more visible, for people to understand spinal cord injury, for people to understand differences, because people can relate to me. They've also watched the Olympics, so I've got some credibility from a performance world. I feel very well equipped to speak about the most personal things of injury, disability, spinal cord injury, inclusivity, that kind of space. Not everyone does feel comfortable, and I don't blame them. It's all very personal things. And if I can be visible and talk about it, then hopefully it creates a psychologically safe space for people who are suffering at home needlessly, because they don't want to or don't feel able to go out, because it's an inhospitable world to people who have differences, whatever that is. They might want to go out but not feel able, and I mean that's a crushing shame for everybody, not just for them, but the wider society. So if I can talk about a few things, blast a few stigmas, be a bit more visible, answer some questions that people are desperate to ask but don't feel like they can or don't know how to ask them, if I can make a safe space for the people that want to know, then that'll help for the people that want them to know.
And I know that you do that almost as selflessly as breathing, but the reality and the context of the population is that it's very brave and it's very important. And I remember you and I having a conversation where I said, if you do speak about these intimate topics, headline will change from Pete Reed, Olympic hero, blah, 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 to Olympic hero speaks about insert, I'm not going to use a tabloid headline, but insert relatively intimate bodily situation. And you just said, but that's fine if it helps people.
Yeah, that is. I don't mind. And I'm not even an Olympic hero. I've got some wonderful successes, but no one knows my name. I'm not knighted, and I'm not Tom Daley or Jess Ennis. So even in London, there were some real headline pages. We won actually in London on the same day as Jess Ennis Hill. I tell you all the time. Got it on repeat. It's my alarm clock in the morning is the commentary to our race.
No, the alarm clock should be the Beijing commentary. That, regardless of Redgrave and Pinsent, that has to be the most iconic. Anybody who is listening, go back and watch the Beijing men's four and them screaming, the British are coming.
Yeah, the British are coming. That was for our race. And it was an amazing race for the spectators. It was a sprint through the Aussies in the last probably 10 strokes, like just cutting through them. A really cool race, and that was Gary Herbert. Great commentary from Gary Herbert. So where were we? We won the same day as Jess Ennis, and so the next day the papers were covered with Jess Ennis, and she's glorious and I love her, and rightly so as well. But I don't feel like an Olympic hero. I feel like part of a crew and part of a wider British rowing success chapter. And I more feel like a naval officer. And now I'm very comfortable being vulnerable. Like I've done that deliberately. So sharing some of those things, it's very natural. It's not selfless because it helps me as well. So it helps me come to terms with my injury. It helps me because I know that it's interesting and helpful to other people, whether that's interested able-bodied people or disabled people with the same stuff going on, thinking, thank goodness I don't have to say that. And I really don't mind because, it's fine, it's real life. And that comes back to that point about how I'm perceived pre and post injury. I'm really comfortable having very intimate conversations with people because I know how many people have got very intimate things going on in their life. It might not be disability, but they might be going through a relationship breakdown or depression, or they might have just been made redundant or lost their home, or all the things that everybody goes through, these big life traumas, not just once, but multiple times in their life. It's just, we don't talk about them because we're too busy getting our teeth whitened and telling everybody how great life is. And you kind of forget, actually, there are aspects of life that are really hard. Life's great as well, and my life's great as well, but let's not pretend that bad things don't happen all the time, and I get front row seats for it because everyone tells me about it. So that's why I feel comfortable talking about it, because I know everyone in the audience is secretly relieved that someone else has got something hard going on and can face up to it and doesn't have to put a filter on and crave likes or crave attention. I don't wrap my self-esteem up with how many people follow me on social media. I mean, it's lovely that people do, and actually it's lovely if people don't as well. If people would prefer not to be on social media, I would prefer no one followed me if they knew they were going to have a better life without it, which by the way they would, but it keeps people going. So people follow me on social media, so I try and put useful stuff out only. Not feigned nonsense about superficial aspects of life. It's not helpful. So instead I do the opposite, just talk about the reality. And I think that's helpful for a lot of people.
You've talked a lot about the psychological approach you take to things post-injury. But I'm interested, when you were talking about your first agency and it being a bit more of a transactional dynamic, you basically said that one of the reasons, the main reason you turned down deals was a practical one. Not enough time, I need to focus on rowing. You didn't say it was a values-based reason or I wasn't aligned to the campaigns. It was, no, it's practical, I'm going to go and get my gold medals. Do you find now that you have different practical reasons that you're unable to take up opportunities or to make a difference because physically you can't get into buildings or you don't have the body battery necessary for the expectations of somebody who might require your skills?
My answer is yes again. So in old world where life was a bit more transactional, and I felt like I did sell out a few times, whether that was money or maybe it was status. I won't name the company that sponsored me that I was in a team with, but it just didn't, it wasn't authentic and it didn't work. And I do remember saying no to a few things. And I do remember thinking as well, that's going to affect my relationship with my agency at the time, because, okay, we're going to put all this work in and at the very last bit, Pete's going to say no. So let's just work with people who will say yes to something. And I can understand the percentages and commercial reasons why now. But back then I was just thinking I want to be a rower. And now I don't think that all companies understand limitations, physical and mental, and physical, not just my capacity, physical capacity that's changed. So how much I can work, how long it takes me to prepare for something and then travel to something, then overnight, how long it takes me to get dressed and undressed by myself, how much energy that takes, how much energy it takes to use the toilet and shower, just even before you've done anything. And then the cost, how much energy it depletes from your battery. So after your appearance or talk or workshop or whatever it is, you're below zero in your battery and ill for a few days afterwards. And then it takes days to come out of that, recover your battery, and then get back into your rehab. So one speaking thing 3 hours away could be a week's work. And not many people understand that. I know you do personally, but companies don't. That's why I value myself in the place that I do, because actually the cost to me is enormous. And when I get home now depleted, there's a little boy that needs my attention and a wife that needs some help with normal life. So yeah, there needs to be an understanding. And so there needs to be a good understanding with commercial partnerships. Who you partner with and why. Can I talk about an ambassador role that I've...
Yeah,
so,
of course.
So I've worked with you and I've worked with a company called Coloplast, which is just a perfect fit. And we're about to go into year two, I hope, fingers crossed. I know they like me and they know I love them. Coloplast are a medical company who deal with all things plumbing. They care for people and their intimate needs, so... that they can live better lives. So anything to do with catheterization or bowel care or stoma care or skin care for pressure sores. They're a global company. They're from Denmark, but they're everywhere. And if you've got any problems with incontinence, you know their name, and I'm a global ambassador for them. I think what they do is incredible. It's a perfect partnership because I've never cared more deeply and more intimately about a corporate partner than I have with Coloplast, because I catheterize 5 or 6 times a day, like the most intimate of processes. It's a medical procedure so that I can go for a pee. So I think about them all the time and I know them well. I care about what I produce for them, and there's no better fit. Whereas when you're an athlete, just choosing something, being a partner with someone, you're turning up, you're telling a story about how hard it is to win an Olympic gold medal, then showing your medals around. It's all a bit, anyone can do it. Anyone that's done that sporting
world. Oh yeah, I just couldn't be bothered.
But I feel silly now, but you see my point, right? That getting an authentic matchup is... and a symbiotic relationship and a perfect harmony and a management of expectations, and they understand my needs almost better than I do because it's the world that they've grown up with for over 60 years in business. It's perfect. So finding those matches so that you care, you want to deliver for them, you want to be good for them, because the cost of being good for and presenting yourself now with my medical needs, the cost is so high. So even an hour's work is more like 10 hours work from my previous life, because your resources are low. So I need to sacrifice more of myself to pour into projects with corporate audiences. It needs to be worthwhile. And for that particular example and a few others, it really is worthwhile. It's worth me pouring my time into, because it's great for me. I think it's great for them as well. And then it's great for wider audiences who we're delivering to.
Well, I've seen, I've witnessed the impact that you have on businesses, and they absolutely love you. And I think it is game changing, and you always go deeper and you always look at the legacy you can leave with them. But I do have one last question. So back to another chat we had. There's been a few. Sitting on Plymouth Hoe, when we were trying to get to, okay, strategically, what are the big things you want to do? What's the impact you want to make? And you kind of said, well, I'm not one for celebrity TV, but I wouldn't mind doing something like Celebrity Bake Off to show that I can compete in a wheelchair. And, you know, I'd been chatting to my mom, and I wouldn't mind doing a book at some point. And then you suddenly said, I want little green people in wheelchairs on traffic lights, which is something that people imagine writing books. Like, they imagine going on Celebrity Bake Off. They don't imagine this. My question isn't, what was that? My question is, do you think Pete pre-injury would have cared enough to want to do something that earned him nothing and was just for everybody else?
I'd like to say yes, because that's how I was brought up. But like my late mum now, that's how she brought us up, to think about other people. And every time I got that wrong growing up, every time I was selfish and didn't think of it from their point of view, she would always correct me and always sort of set me straight. Like, you don't know what she's thinking of Peter, or what he's going through. Every time I was quick to judge or got it wrong. And we all know what that's like in life. So I'd like to say yes, because of mum's influence as we were going on. I'd like to think I want to do something for other people, because other people matter. And that's the most important thing in life. But actually, the reality is you just get sucked into rowing. And all that matters when you're rowing is turning up on time and wanting to go out there and compete and be the fastest in the boat, be the top of the team, row with like-minded people, and then go and beat the Aussies at a home Olympics. So it becomes a very, I wasn't a selfish person. I think rowers can't really be selfish because of the nature of the sport.
But the pursuit can be selfish.
But the pursuit is. And we were so good at rowing. We were really, really, really good at rowing. And actually, the rest of our lives kind of suffered for that. You fall short in other areas. And now, post-rowing and now part of public service and part of wheelchair life, I get to be and live the lessons that mum tried to teach us when we were young. And so I didn't even think that it was something for other people and not for me. Actually, it was mainly your hard work. But that's the direction I'd like to go in. The little green wheelchair users as traffic lights seem so obvious. And it seems small. It's not. It's a really big step in the right direction. I'll add my flag to the millions of people flying flags, doing more visible things in the public space. And it needs to keep going in that direction, because little green wheelchair users instead of little green walking men just jogs people's minds. It shows people that actually that there are other ways to navigate as a pedestrian without being a biped. And maybe I should be a bit more thoughtful, or just look out for a step or a door that's not automatic, or three steps into the hotel. So actually, how do I get in? And as soon as the wider world starts considering these things and designers start designing in a bit more access, then word gets around quickly. More wheelchair users and blind people or people with different needs will start seeing the world as a hospitable place that wants to see them out. And they will be out and contributing and earning money and thriving, rather than shrinking at home unnecessarily and becoming part of a welfare burden completely unnecessarily. So it's the start of a lovely project. I think that's the direction I want to go in. I'm very comfortable putting myself into that public space, being vulnerable in a hospitable world. If it gets less hospitable, less inhospitable as a result.
And it's in no way about preaching. It's just about raising awareness. I mean, you and I, even with the best of intentions, made the error in the first place of saying, well, we need little green men in wheelchairs. Yeah. And everyone turned around and went, well, what about the women in wheelchairs?
Yeah.
And I'm a female saying that, so it's just about raising awareness, right, for everyone, everyone.
And not being preachy at all. I think compassionately, I don't blame people for not seeing things, because I was able-bodied for 37 years. It's worse for me because I lived and loved and worked with Paralympians in rowing. So I was daily with wheelchair users. And even then I didn't see it. I didn't understand. So I don't blame or chastise people for not noticing a stile, a kissing gait, a step, some cobbles, a drain that's the wrong orientation that you could lose a wheel in. Because you just don't know when your world isn't... your eyes aren't trained for those things. But your eyes become more trained when you start seeing it more. And I've really enjoyed starting to lean into that process of change. And I think that could be a healthy direction to go in for those big boxes of purpose and fulfillment. And if my keystone when I die, if it mentions the Olympics as a bit of a footnote, but something to do with making places more accessible, homes, travel, cities, then I think that would be a really special thing.
Well, any place that Pete Reed can't get into is not a place worth being. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Anatomy of an Agency, and I hope you listen to many, many more episodes. In the meantime, let us know what you think at Good Vibes Only Talent on social media. And other than that, it's goodbye from me for now.